Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast, the podcast for serious lacrosse players and their supporters to help further their development and navigate their way throughout their lacrosse careers. And now, here are your hosts, New England Lacrosse Journal's Kyle Devitt and Jack Piatelli.
Welcome to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. I'm your host, Kyle Devitt. Alongside me, Jack Piatelli. Jack, very special day today.
Great day today. My son Brian's 22nd birthday, so it's a special day for him. And they're home from college for the holidays. And we asked them to come in to be guests today, talk a little bit about the recruiting process and their experience as Division I athletes.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to asking them really personal questions about what it's like to have you as a dad. It's going to be weird. It's going to be great. Can't wait.
I bet you can't wait.
They seemed very nice coming in, very well-mannered. Listen, John got to play with one of my favorite players the last 10 years, Jeff Teat. Can't wait to ask him about it.
Yeah, very special time for John and learned so much from Jeff Teat. You know, we could say considerably one of the best college players to play the game. Unfortunately, you know, he wasn't able to finish out his career at Cornell last year because he would have probably been the all-time leading scorer at Cornell and may have possibly won the Wharton.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're not going to talk too much about COVID on the podcast this time, but, you know, it definitely has had an effect. And, you know, especially with John getting to take his fifth year when that's not normally allowed by the Ivy League, it's going to be an interesting discussion. I'm looking forward to it.
Same here. Thanks for having him.
All right, let's get right into it. All right, we're on to part two of our recruiting series. And as part of that, we brought in Jack Piatelli's sons, Brian and John Piatelli. What's up, guys? How we doing?
Doing good. Excited to be on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having us. Excited to be here.
They both play at Cornell in the Ivy League, Division I. And both played on the Piatelli lacrosse team, of course, for their club team. And went to St. Seb's for high school. So I think we start at the beginning. When did you realize that you wanted to play Division I lacrosse?
So Division I lacrosse, I wouldn't necessarily say from a young age I wanted to play Division I lacrosse. I just knew I had a passion for the sport at a young age. You know, I played all sports growing up, but definitely prioritized lacrosse and really enjoyed it. And then as I was growing older, didn't really want to stop, so you know, put a lot of work into it. And then as I got into the recruiting circuit, kind of, you know, ended up looking at some Division I schools, felt that was a good fit for me and kind of ended up there. But I guess the passion was more just to keep playing rather than play Division I.
Yeah, the same thing for me. I remember as kids, we would always go to the NCAA championships every year, whether it was in Philly, Baltimore, or at Gillette. And from then on, even with the tailgates, just hanging out with our kids we grew up playing with, going to these games, watching these college players, I knew I wanted to play in college somewhere. And as I got older, I started to realize that I think I wanted to pursue a lacrosse career Division I rather than two or three. And I was fortunate enough to get recruited by Cornell and end up where I am today.
Jack, let me kind of reformat that to you. You started Piatelli lacrosse in 2010 when these guys were much younger, middle school, right? 2010 probably, or younger than that, elementary school. So you saw them grow up, you're raising them, you're teaching them all the things that you can teach them on all the levels that you're able to. When did you realize that they had the ability to play at a level that you played at?
Well, they're better players than I ever was in college. I didn't start till I was in high school, but I became a better player later in my career. Never thought of them as Division I players, to be perfectly honest with you. What I got my most enjoyment with watching my boys play and even my daughter Julianne is the passion that they have for the game. You know, I think that's so important, is to be really passionate. We went to 10 NCAA championships together as a family. We went to 9 consecutive NCAA championships, and every year they had, "Dad, you know, are we going? Are we going? Are we going? When are we going? When are we going?" And ironically, the year it was at Gillette, I got tickets. We sat in the Cornell section, and Brian and John, they gave him big red gum. And ironically, they ended up at Cornell. But they loved the game. They were outside playing wall ball. They always wanted to play catch. They had each other to work off of. John's been a great role model for Brian as an older brother. And Brian's fed off of John. And they've had a lot of great teammates and a lot of great coaches over the years. The Bussy Adams at Newton North and Keith Campbell at Long Meadow. So a culmination of things. And when they got there, I wasn't surprised, but I had no expectations that they would be Division I players.
So let me toss it back to you guys. So you're, John, you're the older brother. You went through it first, and then Brian, you went through it. How different were your two experiences? I mean, I'm sure you've talked about it now. How different was that? And how did each one of you, did you take a different path to get to Cornell? Or, you know, how did that go for you?
Yeah, so, I mean, I definitely say we had a different path to Cornell. I think it's, for me, I had a different road because I went 2 years of public high, went to King Philip High School, freshman, sophomore year. And at the time, you know, there's new recruiting rules now where you can't get recruited till a junior, but I was before that. So I was, you know, it was pretty heavy that sophomore fall. You needed to get recruited in order to play Division One. And, you know, I had aspirations to play Division One and play in college. And that sophomore fall, I didn't really get a lot of looks. And then that sophomore spring, I played really well, but was a little bit late and kind of behind on the recruiting circuit. So kind of had a conversation with my dad, and he, you know, was very smart to hold me back a year and transfer to St. Sebastian's, where I think elevated my game big time. And, you know, with that transition, I was able to get an extra year to get recruited. So that extra year helped where, you know, that following second sophomore year, in the fall, I went to a Cornell recruiting camp, played really well, really liked the coaches, really liked the team, the atmosphere, culture, kind of everything about it, and had a few more conversations with them, and it was honestly a pretty short process. I didn't really look at, honestly, at many other schools and just kind of pulled the trigger right there because, you know, I didn't get a whole lot of looks, you know. My sophomore year was really just Cornell. You know, I didn't get much from Brown, Harvard, some of the local schools. So, you know, someone that wanted me, I wanted, you know, play for them. So I was excited about it and just pulled the trigger. But Brian can speak to his experience. It definitely was a little different.
Yeah, so for me, a big part of it was playing for Piatelli Lacrosse in the summer tournaments. Obviously, getting in front of college coaches during the summer is huge. But the biggest point for me in my recruiting experience, I think, was going to the individual showcases at specific colleges. Two I remember in particular, going to Villanova and then Cornell. And I was fortunate enough to get invited back for visits at both Villanova and Cornell. But the one thing that stood out to me when I visited Cornell was just obviously the culture there. We have a big thing within our program is well done is better than well said. And I really saw that when I visited Cornell, even so that I committed on my visit there and didn't even end up visiting Villanova. But I've definitely experienced it today at my 3 years. With my 3 years at Cornell now, I've definitely seen how the culture is so ingrained in each and every player and how much each kid is devoted to the program, whether you're the 50th man on the roster or you're the star player. Each kid is so devoted to the program, and everyone just really cares about each other, and our coaches care about us, and we have alumni backing us. So obviously it's been tough not playing the last 2 years, but we know we have alumni rooting for us, guys that went through it just like us. Our coaches went through it themselves. So we're really excited for this year, and we think we have what it takes, so we'll see.
Yeah, let's talk about it a little bit. John, you played a full season. Brian, you haven't yet.
Yeah.
How has that affected you, and how have you been able to get better without games?
Yeah, so obviously that's the challenging part is, you know, junior spring played 5 games, senior spring didn't have one, 5th year coming up. But I guess that the time period after season ends, my junior year, you know, you can look at it negatively and kind of see the, you know, take the pessimistic route and, you know, think, you know, why me, and just, you know, have a bad attitude about it. Or you can kind of spin it on its head and be like, well, look at this extra time I now have, you know, instead of ending in at the end of May, I now have from March until the following February. So it's a lot of time to improve. And the only way to really do that is just taking it day by day. It's not really getting too far ahead of yourself. Looking, thinking about what you can improve on, taking that one day by day, because every day matters. And then you start to stack days, and then you see results. So, and I think a big thing during that time period was the people I had around me, you know, immediate family helping support Brian and I, and then, teammates, particularly coaches, you know, knowing they're in the same situation as us, leaning on each other a little bit, continuing to motivate each other throughout the process so that, you know, we're not wasting these days, we're taking advantage of them. So that was kind of the mindset behind that.
Yeah, for me, I mean, freshman year, I only had the opportunity to play 5 games and never had the opportunity to play a home game. So I'm still waiting on that this year. And I think for me, one thing I really took in over these last 2 years, especially watching other conferences play last year and even having a national championship, is just to realize how fortunate we are to be at Cornell and be with the people we're with. I wouldn't want to play anywhere else. Since getting to Cornell, I became best friends with every guy on the team, and I couldn't ask for better coaches, better guys to be around every day of the week. So for me, it's just realizing how fortunate we are and to be in such a good program. And to be around guys that are so committed and guys that know that we're going to get back on the field one day and know that we're coming strong because we believe we have the talent to reach that Final Four weekend.
So at Sebs, I'm sure you played with a ton of players that went and played in college. I would assume most of the roster went and played in college. How many of them went Division I, and were you guys kind of a little competitive with them to be like to see where you're going to go and getting the looks that you were getting? How did that affect your process choosing a school?
Yeah, so definitely a handful of guys went Division I. I don't know the number. I don't know if Brian knows it off the top of his head.
Yeah, I think my sophomore year, so John's senior, I think we actually had 15 Division I commits, 14 or 15, which is a lot for a private high school in Massachusetts for sure.
Yeah, so with 14, 15 Division I commits, it's hard not to look around and wonder what it'd be like to go there or go there. And that being academically, athletically, and also just like the culture and people. So, knowing that you checked all the boxes, the school you chose, I got to be confident in the school you picked, and obviously I really am. And I guess, looking around, it's definitely motivational too. I had a lot of friends who went to, Dartmouth. A couple guys went to Dartmouth in my class. One guy went to Harvard. So those are other Ivy Leagues. So, being motivated to get to the, work hard in high school and then knowing, all right, I want to get to Cornell, beat those guys when I play them in college. As much as I, like them and appreciate their time in high school, it's definitely competitive.
Yeah, for me, I don't think there was really any jealousy when someone else was committed to another school because you felt like they chose the right choice for them and I chose the right choice for myself. But I thought it was really beneficial to know that someone else within my grade or on the team with me was willing to give their all every day in a high school practice, because sometimes on high school teams you might have a few kids that aren't willing to give their all every single day, but you know that these kids are pursuing it in college, so they want to give their all in high school to continue to get better and push me to get better every day in practice. So that was really nice to have, because you might not get that at some high schools in Massachusetts, but for us to have 15 college commits, our practices were really competitive, and guys were continuously pushing other guys on the team to get better.
Did you guys really like celebrate it when someone got committed? Was it like a big deal in the locker room? Did you guys talk about it?
Yeah, it was definitely a big deal. Always want to celebrate your teammates when something goes well for them. I think I got particularly excited when guys that might have been late recruits got picked up by a school. I think, at the time, when I was a sophomore, a lot of guys either were already committed when I came into St. Sebastian's or were in the process of it. I think, I was definitely happy for those guys, but I got more enjoyment out of, maybe the late bloomers who got committed junior year or even senior fall. You really get psyched for those guys because, they put the time in. They had to be patient when they see other guys committing. They got to, keep the right mindset as they go through that process, and it's definitely longer for them. So I'd say I got more psyched up for them.
Yeah, definitely. Going off what John said, one guy that comes to mind is Peter Blake. He committed junior year, I believe, a little later than the rest of the guys in our class, but definitely deservingly so. Should have got recruited a lot earlier. And he went on to start freshman year at Penn. To see it pay off for them was really nice to see.
Now, I can't help but notice you're both attackmen. Your dad's an attackman. Did you ever think about playing other positions, or Jack, did they play other positions when they were growing up? Do you remember?
Yeah, they played all positions. I had them facing off during the recreation time. They played goalie, defense, midfield. So they played them all. And my daughter also played attack. So they just all gravitated to attack. And I think one of the reasons why they probably did is we, as kids, you know, we played a lot of catch and develop their skill sets, and they want to get better with their skill sets. So when it came time for the coaches to put them in a position, they recognized their skill set, and they all ended up playing attack.
Yeah, I think to that point, though, I was like a midfielder for a lot of my youth. Took a lot of face-offs, and I don't exactly know what grade I transitioned to attack, but probably around like seventh grade, seriously, and then kind of went on from there. But yeah, definitely played most positions. Didn't really put too much time into defense, but played a little, but mostly midfield and then transitioned to attack.
Yeah, I definitely loved taking face-offs as a young kid until the pinch and pop got introduced, and I couldn't hang with the face-off guys anymore. But no, I definitely played midfield and attack growing up. I still love playing both positions. But as I got older, I started to feel like I fit more in the attack position, and my game and my IQ kind of was molded more for the attack position.
Now, Jack, you have hundreds of kids that have played for you, probably up to 1,000 at this point throughout the years, right? When the process came home to you with your two sons, did it feel different in your role as being a dad and also being the club coach of them?
Yeah, it was very different because, fortunately for me, I was in the industry for a long time and I knew a lot of coaches in the industry. And I wasn't one to promote my kids at all and, you know, never bragged or, you know, about them. And that's just not who we are and what we do. But I did make a couple of phone calls to a few coaches that I knew well, and I just said, hey, listen, you know, I think I have a son, and I do that with coaches today. I said, I think I have a player who you might want to take a look at, you know, and if you wouldn't mind, you know, take a look at my son, John. And so we went up to Cornell, and I took a look at him, and Brown actually started looking at him, and Princeton gave him a look, but Cornell really loved his game, and yeah, I mean, and as a parent, I never really thought about the recruiting process, honestly. These guys can tell you the same thing. Even with my daughter, I just want them to enjoy the game, focus on, you know, their academics, and everything will fall into place. And I told this story with, you know, with my son Brian. We were in the car, and he was all worried about getting recruited because his friends were getting recruited in the eighth grade. And I said, have you reached puberty yet? And he said, no. I said, well, you have nothing to worry about. Focus on the academics. Have fun. You know, he was playing hockey. He played soccer at St. Sebastian's, and John played football in high school, and they both played hockey, and they ended up playing at squash at St. Sebastian's. So being a multi-sport athlete, really believe in as well.
Yeah. Did you guys care about rankings? And if you didn't, do you know teammates that did, and how was their attitude towards it? What was their attitude towards it?
Personally, I very much disliked rankings. You know, obviously, I guess if you're on that list, you know, credit to you, and you can definitely be happy and, you know, honored to be on that list. But at the same time, it's coming from a few individuals who, you know, they're, I don't know, I just don't know how it works. You know, it's, some guys go to a showcase, they play well, they're committed somewhere to a big-time school, and you get on the rankings. And, you know, they're probably good players, but there's a lot of players who aren't on that list who might be more deserving just don't go to those showcases or don't have the same opportunities, might go to a, you know, lesser-known school. So, you know, it's harder for them to get on it. So I didn't pay attention to that, to be honest. You know, obviously you know about it because it's just all over the place. You see it on Twitter, Instagram all the time, but you just got to focus on yourself. You know, if you're one of your friends on there, you can definitely be happy for him, but at the end of the day, you focus on yourself. You work for that, work to get better, because it's just a number. Like, a ranking is just a number, so it's nothing to get, you know, rave home about or get too excited about. In terms of guys, if they were on the ranking, at St. Sebastian's, it was never a big deal. No one brought it up. You know, we definitely had some players who were on that list and, you know, deservingly so. And, you know, we were definitely happy for them, but they never, like, were going to brag about it or talk about it. It was just put your head down, keep working, you know. Good job. You got come this far. You're ranked in high school, but keep working so you can, you know, be productive in the rest of your career in high school and into college.
Yeah, definitely. Same thing here. With the rankings, John and I really never paid attention to them at all. I never was really looking at them or worried about them at all. We just kept our heads down, kept working. Because at the end of the day, really, what you do in the summer, yeah, it gets you recruited. But at the end of the day, it matters what you do on the field in college. So if you're going to be a high recruit, one, it puts a lot of pressure on you. And kudos to those guys that do get ranked high on those lists. And obviously a lot of good players are on there. But the thing is, at the end of the day, it just matters about what you can produce in college. And for us, realizing with two seasons canceled now, the goal for us is just to win. It's not about personal accolades anymore. It never was. But the thing for us is we just want to win, and we want to have a good time doing it. And I think this year at Cornell, with 2 years off, we're more excited than ever to get back on the field.
Well, I'm going to do something I didn't do on the last podcast with Jerry, and I'm going to tell you how it works. So rankings are driven by coaches. People think it's one person. People think it's just Ty or it's just inside the cross, and it's not. I think you'll find now there are even more competing recruiting ranks all over the internet and the media space. New England Lacrosse Journal wants me to do rankings, and I have pushed back on it for the same reason that you guys are like, well, we didn't pay attention to it. It's not that you probably didn't pay attention to it, but it's not as consequential in terms of the development. Jerry was always used it as a negative reinforcement, right? And unfortunately, that's what it becomes a lot of the time. And doing rankings is a lot of coaches, and sometimes the coaches are a little self-serving with their ranks. The club coaches certainly are, even at the best, you know, they want that out there. And I think it's important for people that listen to these podcasts, it's not the end all be all to be ranked in a class, right? Your destination is the most important thing, and that it's the right destination for you, I think, is the most important thing. And that kind of leads me to my next question to both of you. The transfer portal is out there. Obviously, John, you chose to do an extra year stay at Cornell. That wasn't really, we didn't know that was going to be an option, right? That was kind of a last minute add by the Ivy League, because usually they don't allow that. How have you had teammates that have gone in the portal or people that, you know, teammates from high school even, that have talked about it and changed schools? And is that dynamic, I mean, obviously you two are both happy at Cornell, but have you seen that dynamic kind of creep into to maybe your friends' lives at all?
Yeah. I think for me, it wasn't really too much of a consideration. I was happy at Cornell. You know, I worked pretty hard freshman, sophomore, junior year to get where I'm at. And, you know, I kind of want to finish the job and, you know, cap it off on a high note and just get one more season to, you know, finish the way, you know, I wanted to. You know, we say leave it better than you found it. You know, so I still think there's work to be done. So I kind of wanted to finish at Cornell. So I don't think it was a consideration for me, but definitely for other guys. You know, one of my good friends from Cornell, you know, entered the transfer portal and ended up a different school. And, you know, he ended up there for all the right reasons. You know, he, you know, got into a really good program at this school, and, you know, it was, you know, it's a great fit academically and athletically. So, you know, everyone was happy for him. There was no bad blood at all. There never will be. So definitely, I mean, it's obviously a tough process, and just kind of what happened with COVID is just the reality that people are going to go into the transfer portal. So, you know, we were never going to, you know, be mad at anyone for going to another school. So, yeah, we definitely see it and are going to continue to see it. And, you know, you just hope that everyone's doing it for the right reasons. And in our cases, they definitely are.
Yeah, I mean, especially with COVID, you can't really get mad at anyone for their decision. At the end of the day, it's a personal decision. You got to do what's best for you, whether that's academically or through lacrosse to go to a program where maybe you get more time or succeed more. But for me, it was never a question that I wanted to do a fifth year at Cornell. My whole grade ended up taking last semester off in order to pursue a fifth year at Cornell, and I can't imagine myself playing anywhere else. So it's definitely where I want to be for 5 years, and I'm happy I did it.
New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal will return after this message. Catch the Sacred Heart University Pioneers on the ice this season. The Pioneers Division I men and women's hockey programs will not disappoint. Season ticket packages and individual tickets are on sale now at sacredheartpioneers.com. And opening in 2023, Sacred Heart University's Martiri Family Arena, a brand new 122,000 square foot premier skating facility in Fairfield, Connecticut. Learn more at sacredheartpioneers.com.
Are you serious about playing your sport in college? Do you need a flexible education that allows you to maintain your practice and competition schedules while also preparing you to succeed at the next level? You should check out the University of Nebraska High School. UNHS is accredited and offers more than 100 online courses, including NCAA-approved courses to protect your academic eligibility. Students could earn a UNHS diploma or take a single course for transfer credit. Courses are college prep, self-paced, and available 24/7, 365. Enroll anytime and take up to a year to complete a course. Visit highschool.nebraska.edu today.
Looking to keep up with all the latest news and information on New England lacrosse? New England Lacrosse Journal and LaxJournal.com are the premier resources for information and inspiration on the New England lacrosse scene. Have every issue of New England Lacrosse Journal, the magazine, delivered to your home or office. And don't forget to stay in the game every day with a digital subscription to LaxJournal.com to receive daily digital lacrosse coverage on club lacrosse, college commits, prep and high school, Division I, II, and III colleges, showcases, rankings, and much more. Get in the game and behind the scenes now by logging on to LaxJournal.com. Just click on the subscribe button and start the subscription that is right for you today. New England Lacrosse Journal is a Siemens Media publication. Siemens Media. Inspiring. Informative. Insightful.
What is one piece of advice you would give to a rising sophomore right now looking to get recruited and play at the Division I level?
That's a heated question. One piece of advice, I mean, I guess maybe I'll add a few. I guess one that comes to mind is definitely you got to make the effort. There's obviously a lot of players out there, so make the effort as in, like, you got to email coaches, you want to be organized, you want to, you know, either get with your parents or start researching schools, try to figure out where you fit academically, where your interests are, I guess what type of things you want to study in college, start to try to figure out that aspect. And then athletically, you know, have an honest conversation where you think you align best, whether that be Division I, II, or III. So just start to create a roadmap for yourself. And then from there, it just comes down to, putting the work in, focus on yourself, have patience, have positivity, you gotta have confidence in yourself that it's going to work out. So biggest thing is, probably keep working hard and have the confidence that someone's going to see you and you're going to, find the right home, and just have patience, but also set yourself up for success, by emailing coaches, reaching out, saying you're interested, telling them, giving them highlight tapes, telling them when you're playing, the tournaments you're attending. And I would also recommend going to, if you really have a top school, going to that showcase, if they hold a showcase, because that's how Brian and I got recruited. So, definitely very valuable.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more with what John said. And one thing I'll add is, after you do get recruited and choose a school that best fits you, it's important to still focus on getting better every day, because when you get to college, you're going to school with kids that were all the best players on their high school team as well. So you're not going to be sticking out like the best player. So it's important to keep getting better. I know a lot of club programs do a lot of winter clinics. And stuff like that, and showcases even, and just to get your stick in your hand after you get recruited is crucial, because you'll realize once you get to college, you're playing with a lot better players, guys that have experience, guys that are a lot older than you. So it's crucial that these kids, that once they get recruited, it's not stagnant with their skills. They continue to improve, because when you get to college, the coaches expect you to be better than when you were first recruited.
Yeah, a lot of players now who are committed, it's like, whoo, I'm committed, right? It's the beginning line. It's the starting line. It's not the finish line. The finish line is your senior year in college when you get your diploma and you got a job waiting for you. That's the finish line, because no one's making a lot of money playing professional lacrosse. And I would also like to say it happened to all three of my children. My daughter was recruited by a great coach at Endicott. She went to Endicott her freshman year. The coach stepped down. So a new coach came in. And my daughter had to play for another coach, and it didn't work out as well as the coach that recruited her. John was recruited by one coach at Cornell his freshman year. The coach was fired. New coach comes in, so he's playing for a different guy than recruited him. Brian was recruited by another coach, and he decides to leave and go to Hopkins to coach. So the guy that recruited Brian now is not coaching him. So my point is, you have to pick the right school. So John is on his third head coach at Cornell. So again, it's the school, it's the culture, it's the academic piece, and the finish line. What are you going to get out of the academics? Where are you going to end up working, making a living?
How challenging has that been, having different coaches? They're all, I know two out of the three fairly well. So, and I know they're, I say this knowing that they're very different. So how has that been for you to deal with and kind of go through your experience in your college career?
Yeah, just to fact check that, I've been coached by two. I was recruited by one, and then he got fired my senior year of high school. And then I guess, you know, the second one left to Hopkins, as my dad said. So, you know, I guess I'm kind of on my third, but I've only been coached by two. But in terms of the question, in terms of how I've, I guess, transitioned, how I've had, you know, different coaches. I mean, throughout life, you know, I've had plenty of coaches through hockey, squash, lacrosse. Played football 1 year, soccer, whatever it may be. But you kind of just learn to adjust to your new coaches. And also, particularly at Cornell, we're really driven by our culture and the people that are there. So, I would say our seasons tend to be dictated by our senior class, how close they are, how, you know, motivated they are, and how much they influence others. You know, as a freshman, I was really looking at the seniors for guidance. I was really learning from the seniors. And, you know, the coach was kind of facilitating everything, and he did a great job, and he was good X's and O's. And then in terms of Coach Busick and Coach Stevens, now those guys, you know, played at Cornell, so they've been awesome. They're full of energy. Coach Busick and Coach Stevens are honestly both very instrumental in my growth as a player and I guess as a leader at Cornell. So, you know, very close with them, so it's pretty easy playing for them because it's a lot of fun. I would say Cornell is definitely driven by the senior class, the leaders, and just the people and culture that we kind of depend on day to day.
Yeah, I agree. Definitely the culture at Cornell is what drives our program, and having two coaches now that went through it, making it really relatable for us. They understand we go through every day outside of lacrosse, whether it's social life or academics. So once we hit the field and the coaches are pushing us to be our best, they understand what we're going through at the end of the day. So it's really nice having two coaches that went through it that you can relate to.
You guys are both business majors, yes? How did you pick that as your academic focus?
Yeah, so I came in, I entered into the arts and sciences school my freshman year. And that whole year was honestly just experimental, taking all sorts of classes, just kind of seeing what I like. And then I took a I think it was a marketing class in my spring that I really liked. And I knew about the Dyson School at Cornell, which is the business school. And honestly, like, you know, my dad has been in business for a number of years. We saw him, you know, doing sales for Warrior for a number of years. So definitely was around it. And my sister's in marketing. So I think having those two kind of, you know, as, you know, role models and looking up to them, it was kind of in my blood to at least try it. So transferred in my sophomore year and have really enjoyed it. Definitely think I made the right choice. So I guess, yeah, that was my experience with choosing a major.
Yeah, I took a little different path. I also started in arts and sciences, but I recently transferred into the hotel school at Cornell, which is also under the SC Johnson School of Business. The reason I transferred is just because the classes I'm taking within the hotel school are a lot more tangible to what I want to do, whether that's real estate or finance, post-college, whereas within the art school, I was kind of just taking a lot of random classes that didn't really fit what I wanted to do. But what's nice about college is, and Cornell having seven different colleges, is even though I started in the arts and sciences school, I had a few semesters to start to figure out what I wanted to actually do after college, because going into college, I had no idea what I wanted to do. But after transferring, I now understand what I want to do, and these classes that I'm taking are actually tangible, and I'm actually learning about things I want to do once I graduate.
Yeah, I would also add to, I guess one thing that I've added since getting into the business school is a real estate minor, which is through the hotel school. And that interest kind of was sparked by a freshman year internship I did. It was a company called First Highland, real estate development company, but kind of got introduced to the real estate world through my internship, then went back to Cornell and said, I want to take some classes on this. Took some classes and got more interested in it. So now I'm doing a real estate minor. So I would say, you know, as you go through college, your interests might change a little. Something might spark an interest. And, you know, you got to find the right school that has, you know, kind of, I guess, a broad range of opportunities so you can take advantage of some of the interests that you get maybe through an internship or a summer job.
I want to ask John and Brian a question in terms of what would you recommend or tell players out there prepare themselves to play Division I, II, III lacrosse? They graduate from their senior as seniors, and they're going to school no matter whether it's Clark, Springfield, Harvard, Brown, UNC, St. A's. Playing in college today is much more challenging and difficult than it was when I went and Kyle went. What would you tell players what the expectations are? And talk a little bit about what the daily routine is at Cornell to compete for playing time on the field.
Yeah, I can answer that. So at Cornell, we practice up to three times a week in the fall just because Ivy League has restrictions. I know a lot of Division I programs are practicing 5 days a week with lifts as well. We're lifting 3 to 4 times a week, so some days you have doubles, which means an early morning and a late afternoon practice. But there's also the balance of school, obviously, and social life and meeting new people, because at a school like Cornell, we've been very fortunate to meet a lot of successful people and a lot of smart people. So it's really important to connect with those people outside of lacrosse. But for me, the biggest thing is kind of just balancing that social, that school, and that lacrosse, because I came to Cornell for the academics and the athletics, and a huge part of our program with the alumni help has been something we call the Cornell Lacrosse Association, which has really been beneficial for John and I to connect with alumni and all of our teammates to network and create jobs after college, because at the end of the day, we can't all play lacrosse our whole lives. So once you get to college, it's really about balancing that school and lacrosse. And you really, if you're going to play at Division I level, you really got to love lacrosse, because you're doing it all fall, all winter, and all spring. It's really an all year round thing. So you really got to love it. And I'm happy that I do. And I can't see myself playing anywhere else. So I'm happy I'm at Cornell, and happy I'm at the within the hotel school, and found something I enjoy doing.
Yeah, just to piggyback off of Brian there, a couple things I'd add, I guess, like recommendations to the younger generation coming through college. Going into your freshman year, I guess one big thing is making sure you're really in shape. You know, make sure you're well conditioned coming into the fall, because that's one way you can impress, you know, your teammates is, you know, if you're crushing the conditioning test, you're crushing the first running you do, or crushing the weight room. Like, those are small things that go a long way, because you'll be ready lacrosse wise, because that's, you know, you're going to be so honed in on trying to get as best you can, as good as you can get right before you get into college. So one thing I'd recommend is be well conditioned to really, you know, there's a lot of aspects to playing on the field. You got to be good on the field, but you got to be good off the field too. You got to take care of your academics. You got to crush this conditioning test, be strong in the weight room, because those all play a role. And then another thing I'd recommend, as Brian kind of talked about the balancing act of Cornell and other, you know, schools, is one thing I would say is to make sure you don't get too hard on yourself. You know, you're balancing a lot, and you're going to have some tough days in there. It's just kind of inevitable. The big thing is maturing as you get into college, is learning that you're going to have some ups and downs. There's going to be bumps in the road, and just learning how to control your emotions and deal with those ups and downs, because the season's going to be up and down. You're going to have practices that don't go as well as you wanted to. There's going to be some really good practices, but just keeping a neutral, steady head as you go through the season is very important. So, you know, as you go into college, just know there's going to be some, you know, tough times, but know that you're you know, capable of doing it, and, you know, tough enough to get through it. And don't be afraid to lean on your teammates and coaches as well as you go through that process.
All right, we can't dodge this question. You have to answer it. Can't dodge it. It's the worst part about being a D1 athlete.
Body hurts most of the time, especially as you get older. Body hurts, you know, practicing and lifting. But you just got to take, you know, rehab as much as possible, stretch, ice, and get through it. But, you know, it's tough. You get beat up pretty good between the workouts, the conditioning, hard practices, sprinting when we, you know, don't touch a line or mess up in the sub game. It's tough on the body, so I'd say that's probably the toughest part.
The one thing I'd say is that turnaround when you have a night practice and then you got to wake up at 4:30 in the morning. My housemate's going to attest to this, but that alarm going off or one of your buddies waking you up is pretty tough. But something you get used to, something you got to do to succeed in Division I level. So,
did you guys think going into Cornell it would be as difficult and as challenging as it has become, and how important is the mental part of the game?
To answer the first question, I would definitely say I didn't know it was going to be as hard as it is, but also to that point, you know, as a 17, 18-year-old coming out of high school, I probably wouldn't have assumed anything was going to be that hard, because you're on top of the world after your senior spring. You know, hopefully it goes well for most people, but you know, you're on top of the world. You're committed. You're going to a you know, a school that, you know, that you chose and you're happy about. You know, you got senior spring. You got your final lacrosse season. You know, nothing can kind of faze you. And then, you know, that college is tough. So I definitely wasn't expecting it, but that's part of maturing. It's part of growing up and learning that, you know, it's not always going to be easy road. So you just got to kind of you know, put your foot down and start working. In terms of the mental game, yeah, I mean, you kind of see it everywhere. You know, the best players in all sports professionally are talking about how important the mental side of the game is. It's pretty much everything. Like, you obviously got to work to have the physical skills, but in order to put those to execution on game day, you got to be in the right headspace. You got to be dialed in, and you got to have confidence yourself. So, yeah, it's huge.
Yeah, I think I had a little bit of advantage, obviously, going into college just because John was there, so it gave me a little bit of a warning of what to expect. But in terms of COVID, obviously no one expected that. So I'll never forget that day when our season got canceled. We were all in our locker room, and our coach came in, and I think only the NESCACs had canceled at that point, and no one really knew what COVID was. And I'll never forget everyone just broke down crying in our locker room, because you just felt like all the work you had put in all fall in those first five games where we were 5-0, number two in the country, just kind of went to waste, because Cornell had a few bad years in the prior years, and for us to get to that point was really, really good to see because of all the work we had put in with our strength conditioning coach and whatnot. But in terms of mentally, Division One, being a Division One athlete is tough. There's no way around that. It's definitely tough, especially during COVID. It's been hard on our guys. But using your teammates and your coaches just to each and every day push you to get better, because one day you might have a bad day, like John mentioned earlier, but it's really about the consistency and piecing together day after day to continuously want to get better, because you know at the end of the day it's all going to be worth it. So just using your guys to lean on. Maybe one day they need to lean on you, but the next day you need to lean on them. So it's crucial having good teammates, and I think we have that at Cornell. Couldn't have asked for better guys in my grade, better guys to live with, and better teammates within that locker room that pushed me every day to get better and pushed me mentally to be stronger.
That game you guys played against Penn State is still one of – I think it was the best game of that year, the shortened COVID year. You're smiling. And I can't let you go without asking you this question. This is purely a selfish question for me. I need to know. What's it like to play with Jeff Teat?
It's awesome. He's a very special player. He makes the game so easy, slows it down. He's a ton of fun to play with. I was very fortunate to get 2.5 years with him. Obviously he's doing great things professionally. It's not a surprise at all if you know what type of kid he is and type of worker and leader he is. It's no surprise, and he's just silky smooth, and he's unbelievable. So one thing that he really does well is he doesn't need the ball on his stick to be really good. He's really good off ball. And also he makes his teammates around him a lot better because he moves the ball so smoothly. And he's just playing a step ahead of everyone. Once you learn to play with him, which really isn't hard, it's a ton of fun.
Yeah. Freshman year coming in, obviously everyone knew Jeff. But I didn't really let that get to me. And Jeff was really a huge part of my success freshman year. Whenever I was in practice playing with him, he would just always make me look better, always finding me. I'd have my stick up cutting, and it would just be in there the next second. So I don't know how he did it, but he made me a lot better player, and I thank him for that today. And the guy he is off the field really shows to how much we support him, and all the guys at Cornell just really are following him now, obviously, in the PLL and NLL, and we really care about what he's doing because he meant so much to our program. But one thing I got to say about that Penn State game is I got to give a shout-out to my friend Angelo Petrakis for scoring 2 goals in that game and possibly having the best celebration that Cornell's seen, jumping on John. But I know he'll like to get a shout-out, so I thought I'd mention it.
Awesome. Well, hey, we could talk to you guys for another hour, but unfortunately, we're out of time. And, you guys got to get ready to get back up to Ithaca and get started on 2022. So just want to thank you guys for coming, and really appreciate you sitting down, having some frank discussion about being a Division I player and playing in the Ivy League.
Yeah, thanks for having us. It was cool. Get on the podcast. My dad talks about it all the time. He loves it, so it was fun getting on. This is a very cool studio, and it's cool to check it out, so thanks again.
Yeah, thank you. It was awesome being here. We'll definitely continue to listen to the podcast. It's awesome being here with our dad and you, Kyle, so thank you for having us.
Awesome.
Pleasure having my sons here and having the opportunity to sit here with them and spend some time with Kyle and pass along some great information in terms of what it takes to play at the Division I level.
Yeah, you guys did great.
Thank you.
Really? I'm impressed. I thought you'd be more like him. So,
he stutters.
We gotta crack that whip. We gotta get him ready. But he came in ready and he produced good offspring. So, great job. All right. So now we've had your sons on the pod. Do we have your daughter next? Is she coming on?
I asked her to come today as well, but she's tied up. She's in California tomorrow to celebrate New Year's. But it was great having the boys in, and you did a great job. It was a little awkward having my sons on the podcast, but they really enjoyed it, and I think they did a nice job.
Yeah, whoever is doing media training at Cornell, you need a raise, man, because that was impressive. And I don't want to just give credit to them; they did great. John was, it was funny because you can tell John's the older brother because he would go first on a lot of questions, and then Brian would come in and he always had something great to add as well. So hopefully you guys learned a lot by listening to that talking to two Division I athletes, especially at the Ivy level at Cornell.
Yeah, and I think, like Brian said, he had a great advantage being a younger brother, and John was a great role model, and he learned a lot in terms of the process and, you know, keeping him motivated and patient throughout the whole process. Like, you know, John was a late bloomer and John was a late recruit, but he continued to work hard. And I think patience is the most important thing as a player. Just focus on what you can do to make yourself better. And obviously the classroom is very important.
Yeah. It's always funny when I meet players that I've written about, because I never know. Lacrosse is strange to write about because you never really know what someone looks like underneath their helmet. And it's hard to connect a face to accomplishments and goals and assists and watching tape on them. You know, right before they left, I was like, all right, so where are you playing this year? You know, where do you think you're going to be? And he told me, and I was like, oh, yeah, but you like to be behind and kind of initiating a lot. And he just kind of looked at me like, what? How do you know that? You know, but it's part of the game. It's part of the fun. And listen, they gave great advice to upcoming recruits and players, and, you know, can't wait to hope maybe have them back, watch them play, and, you know, go forward with our new recruiting series here on the podcast. And I just want to thank everybody again for listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. For Jack Piattelli, I'm Kyle Devitt. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to New England Lacrosse Journal's Chasing the Goal podcast. Be sure to subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play Music, Spotify, TuneIn, Stitcher, and other podcast platforms. Also, listen to the podcast on the website, laxjournal.com. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at NELaxJournal, Instagram at New England Lacrosse Journal, Lax Journal on Facebook, and our email address, chasingthegoal@laxjournal.com. Join us again next time as we go chasing the goal. Chasing the Goal, a Siemens Media podcast.